Well, I'm sure all of you have a certain preference as far as things that you like when you to eat. And I'm sure there are things that you do not like to eat. And I had a wide list of that when I was young. There was a lot of things. I pretty much, and I still am, kind of a meat and potatoes kind of guy, you know. But over the years, my taste has changed. And though Judy will say to you, he doesn't eat a whole lot of vegetables, she manages to get me to eat salads and a few other things, and so that makes her happy, that makes my doctor happy, and we're good. But I can remember when I was in college, I had my first experience of experiencing Chinese food. Can you believe that? It took me until I was 19 or 20 to experience, and I loved it. Same thing with other things. You know, your tastes begin to change, and you begin to experiment with things, and you try different things, and so your likes kind of grow. There's a wonderful movie, or at least I thought it was pretty good, with Deborah Winger and Billy Crystal called Forget Paris. Well, has anybody ever seen that? Okay, a couple people. It wasn't a huge hit, but I liked it. And part of that story is about Billy Crystal, who kind of gets into a routine, and he does everything, including when he goes out to eat, he always orders the same thing, veal parmesan. And after a while, his friends just automatically know what it is that he's going to have, and when we get towards the end of the movie, he changes it from veal parmesan to veal piccata, just to show that something new has happened to his life. It's not a huge step, but it's something different. And that's kind of what happens today, but you know, what happens today in the passage of Acts is much more significant, and it's actually much more earth-shattering. It's just hard for us to envision that today because, you know, we've kind of lived this way for all of our lives. But can you imagine that, you know, here's Peter having this vision in chapter 10 of Acts. This is before we get to the story for today, which explains everything that he kind of reviews again when he talks to the authorities in Jerusalem. Talks about this sheet coming down, and three times he's told that he should kill and eat, and there's all kinds of living things on there. And some of it, of course, according to Jewish dietary laws, were unacceptable. And the voice says to him, Peter, you will not call this profane. He says, whatever God has created is not profane. Now that in itself was earth-shaking news to Peter, let alone the others who haven't been a part of his vision. And then the second part of that was that he was told in this vision that there will be some individuals who will call upon him and ask him to come to the home of a Gentile. And not just any Gentile, this is a centurion, a commander of a legion. His name is Cornelius. And so what he does is that he goes in, and it actually plays out where these people come, he goes, he enters the house of a Gentile, something believing Jew, no individual who has followed the law would ever do. And yet he has done that. And not only has he done that, but he sits down and he eats with them, and then he baptizes them. A scandal. It really is, and it's hard for us to hold on to that. And I'm not sure how I would, there's no way I can equate that. Other than when we experience new things as a Christian community, sometimes when we see these things, the first thing is like, oh, I don't want to do something new, or I don't like this. Let's go back to the old way. Maybe something in that matter, but that's really a lot less than what Peter was about to face. He was in a lot of hot water. And as the book or the lesson opens today, it says that there were those who criticized him. And I think that word is probably not even strong enough with what happened. I'm sure there were those who were scandalized by the fact that, number one, that he would even consider going into the home of a Gentile. And secondly, that he would eat with them. Remember the trouble that Jesus could cause because he would eat with tax collectors, and he would eat with prostitutes. He would gather with those that were unclean, the lepers. You can think about it when he met the Samaritan woman at the well and the scandal he created by talking with her. No believing Jewish male would ever be caught talking to a Gentile, let alone a woman. And Jesus did all these things as a way of conveying that very message that he gives to his disciples that we hear today in the gospel reading, that we are to love one another as God has loved us, as he has shown us his love. And so Peter then explains everything. Now imagine you, that being you, trying to explain to him, to these authorities what it is that he has done. Imagine that you were in a position of doing something that ran counter to whatever your place of business was about, or perhaps maybe expectations at home. You know, it's kind of like, you know, when you do something and you know maybe you're going to get in trouble for this, but you know it's the right thing. Then try to justify yourself. It's not always easy. The interesting thing is about this story is that even at the conclusion, and we'll talk about that in a minute, that they would again come back and this would continue to cause controversy in the early church. It wasn't resolved after this whole explanation of what Peter had said. But the response is pretty amazing. Peter speaks about how we are not to make distinctions between them and us. How often do we do that when we talk about, even among friends, we can have this distinction about, you know, who's really family and who's not. I can remember serving in a congregation that we went through a period of time of trying to work together and look at perhaps coming together. And when the churches decided not to do that, an entire section of the other church that I had not been serving decided this was the best thing to do, and they just up and came over. It was the first and only time in my life that I received almost 100 new members in a congregation. And in a quandary, I called the bishop, and I said, I don't know what to do, because I said, I don't want to be seen as the bad guy here. He says, doesn't matter, David. He says, as far as I'm concerned, you're the pastor in this community, and you take him. It's like, okay. But for the longest time in that newly created community, the original members and the new members, it was we and they, them and us. And I would keep saying, it's us, it's us, it's us. It's important for us to understand that, because even when we have new members who are part of this community, not to distinguish by saying, oh, them, but to say, you know, that we are together. We are one. And perhaps maybe that's the change in our menu, in our vocabulary, in the way that we make distinctions, and that we don't lift up differences among those that are of different color or ethnicity or come from different backgrounds, that we don't make this a them and us kind of thing. God shows no partiality. And that's not always easy for us. I can remember in another congregation, an older lady who would always remind me of the fact that she was the granddaughter of one of the charter members of the church. And that was very important to her, and I understood that, but it was also a way of kind of making a distinction among from her with the rest of the congregation. And I would just kindly say, Leona, you certainly are a part of the whole congregation, aren't you? I don't know that she ever got that, but it was important to her. And I guess sometimes you just let things slide, but in reality, God doesn't care. You know, who came first and who came last? Who's on first or who's on second? All God cares about is that he has called you as his child, as we will celebrate a baptism at 11 o'clock today. Another one. There's no distinction. And I think what we need to be doing is that we need to be cued in on the cries of what we hear out in the community. When we see things that are creating struggles and unease, and that's where the church needs to step in. It's not a we versus them kind of thing. When there are issues in the inner city, and we should be a part of that. Because what goes on there affects us. That's not always easy to do. Because that means taking risks, just as Peter did as he stepped out and addressed Cornelius and his family. It involves perhaps maybe that we have to put ourselves on the line and trust that God is leading us to where we need to be, even though we know the rest of society may say to us, you know, you're screwed up. Why would you do something like that? But being a disciple is not something that comes easily. It's something that comes with practice and with prayer and with constant study. It comes with support from each other that bolsters us so that we understand that when we leave from this place, our work isn't done. It's just beginning. Today is the place where we come together and we are invigorated. We are fed by the body and blood of Christ, and we are fed by His Word, and we are nurtured, and we are assured of the fact that God has chosen us as individuals, as His children. But it doesn't stop there. It's just as you hear the assisting minister proclaim, you know, go in peace, serve the Lord. That idea that we go out into the world stays with us wherever we go, to our places of work, to our homes, to our schools, wherever it is, that we are able to make a difference and to change that menu up that most of the world has set and God has said, it's not enough yet. There's a couple more courses to come. Things that you haven't even experienced yet. Try it. You'll like it. But maybe not. And I think that's the reason. That's the reason when we hear in Acts at the conclusion that after Peter explains all this and he says, you know, after saying all these things, who am I? Who am I to hinder what God has said and what God has asked me to do? And it says the whole community fell silent. And I think that silence wasn't just a thoughtful contemplation. I think that silence was fear. Fear of what was going to happen. A fear of something new that was opening up and was going to change things forever. It wasn't just the word meant for the Jewish community, but for the entire world. I think they were afraid. Even though they came around to praising God for this, I'm sure there were those that were a little less excited and enthusiastic. William Willimon, who was a former United Methodist bishop, as well as a theologian and a specialized in worship and liturgy, speaks about this silence. It was really God's, or the people's fearful response to the changes that are occurring all around us. But what we need to remember, as Willimon reminds us, is that who is the hero here? Who is the one that we look towards, giving us the example of how we are to live? Is it Peter? And Willimon would say, no. Is it Cornelius for reaching out to Peter and to the Jewish community? No. Is it the Jewish authorities? No. It's God. It's God, because God is the one who intercedes for us. And God is saying that not just to my chosen people, but to the entire world, I claim you as my own. You are mine. And God reaches down and with each individual blesses them and turns them to Him. Now that's a little different understanding than what a lot of people have, and that is that we have this tendency of saying that I have made a decision to follow Jesus, or that I have, I believe in Christ. But what Willimon is saying is that it is God who leads us, who brings us to Himself. It's not us. Even though you may come forward to the altar to receive the body and blood of Christ, it's God's action towards us. It's His love towards us that feeds us and nurtures us. That's an assuring thing, because I don't know that I could trust myself. I have sometimes second thoughts. even when I can be assured that I believe that this is where God, you know, wants me to be or wants me to do, there are times that I'm not so sure about that. I don't have all the answers. But the one answer I do have is that I know that God comes to me. And God grants me the strength as he's given it to Peter. And God has opened my eyes to new and wondrous ways, and sometimes scary ways, that we are called to minister. And that's our challenge, that we celebrate this resurrected Christ out there in the world, a world that isn't always so receptive, but to trust that God is with us, and the words that are spoken, God will open the ears of those who receive. That's his promise. That's for all of us, not just Peter, but for all of us. So the scandal of today is that God's message is for everyone. And the other scandal is, just be careful with what you try and what you do, because you might find that you like the new menu that's being offered today. It's God's menu, and it's a great one. Amen.